Bill Ayers is perhaps best known for his 1960s radical activism and as a co-founder of the revolutionary group Weather Underground. Since the 1980s, he has been an activist in education reform, curriculum, and instruction, a now-retired distinguished professor of education at the University of Illinois at Chicago. He is the author or editor of more than a dozen books on education theory, policy, and practice. He is also the author of a new book, Demand the Impossible, a Radical Manifesto, and he'll be in Portland next Monday, December 12th, to talk about it at Powell's Books downtown at 7:30 p.m. Welcome to KABU, Bill.
Thank you very much for having me, Lori. Nice to say hello to you this morning.
Yes, let's talk about Demand the Impossible. Why did you write it?
Well, first let me say, when you said perhaps best known as a 60s radical, that made me smile. My grandchildren know me best as their grandfather, so it just depends on who you ask.
Right.
Just to keep everything in perspective.
Okay, Grandpa, tell us about this book.
Okay, the book is called Demand the Impossible, and I wrote it initially as a pamphlet. I felt that we needed, those of us who are in the progressive movement, the radical movement, the left movement, those of us who think of ourselves as progressives or revolutionaries, we are very good at critiquing the world as it is, but we also need to spend some time imagining the world we're working toward. You know, there's a bumper sticker I see in Chicago often that says, if you're not pissed off, you're not paying attention. And I agree with that sentiment, but I always want to slap a bumper sticker next to it that says, and if you're only pissed off, you won't get to where you need to go. You have to be powered also by a vision, by a sense of love and generosity and possibility and hope. So this book was written in that spirit, and in many ways it's an argument for expanding our radical imaginations, getting in touch with them, okay, and not being trapped in the frameworks test, one, three, that we're test, asked test, to debate test, politics
test,
in.
You are hearing
I'll
it?
Give you one example.
Is it going over the air?
You know, during the debate, the questions that were asked of the two major candidates for president struck me as very interesting. I would have liked to have asked many, many questions, but in terms of education, for example, I would have liked to have asked, is education a human right or is education a product to be sold at the marketplace like any other? That would begin a real discussion about what we need in this country. And so here we are, we're about to debate whether Obamacare is worth saving or whether we should go to pure predatory health insurance capitalism. And I don't want that debate. I want to say free health care for all is what we ought to be discussing, and that's the debate we ought to be having. So it's written in that spirit, Lori, of imagining what could be.
Yeah, it really is this, I mean, on the one hand, pretty depressing catalog of where we are today, but also this manifesto of hope, urging us to imagine and to believe that another world is possible. So Bill, what gets in the way of that power to imagine a different world?
Well, I think there are a lot of things. I mean, I think that for some of us, there's real oppression grinding us down and real exploitation that makes it difficult to do more than kind of have the energy to get food on the table for your kids. I mean, I think those are some of the things. But I also think that we're offered in our educational system, in our especially in our bought media, we're offered a very narrow range of choices. And this question of framing the choices is a powerful question. I mean, how do we see the issues before us? If we're given a very narrow choice, take on the question of war and peace, we're asked to consider, should we bomb this country as the United States, or should we just strangle it economically? I mean, that's no choice at all. And many of us, and certainly your listeners, want to offer a third alternative, which is, why doesn't the United States become a nation among nations? Why don't we disarm? Why don't we close all foreign military bases? These are the kinds of radical ideas that actually aren't impossible at all. They're quite possible. But they are the kinds of questions we ought to be debating. And I think, you know, I think our imaginations get shortchanged in a lot of ways. But one way is that we don't act if we don't think there's a possibility of success. So we can know what's wrong, but if we don't know what we're fighting for, or we don't think by taking an action we can actually change the world. It's very difficult to motivate ourselves to get moving.
Well, you have a great example in your book about meeting with a group of Hell's Angels who arrived at one of your talks to disrupt, but you ended up engaging each other, and I think in some ways, you know, that illustrates the kind of patient organizing that we all have to be involved with, working with and having dialogue with people who may not agree with us, but see that they're getting a raw deal. So do you want to talk a bit about, the issue that you engaged with that evening?
Sure. Sure. I mean, I think one thing I want to say, Lori, is you raised the question of organizing, patient organizing. I like that word because I think too often we get caught up, those of us on the left and those of us who think of ourselves as activists, and we foreground activism, which is the performative part of what we do, and we de-emphasize organizing. But the real work of making radical change is about organizing. It's about mobilizing people. And the example you give made me laugh because it's very vivid in my memory. But I was giving a talk at the University of Southern Georgia, and as I began the talk, I think 12 or 15 Hell's Angels wearing patches on their jackets that said Tea Party Patriot came filing in and sat in the front row, and they looked menacing, and I swallowed hard, and then I gave my talk. And at the end of it, the head of the Hell's Angels asked the first question, and he said, you know, I agree with you more than I thought I would, because he had, you know, the typical right-wing stereotype of that goes around the social media about me, and he found me reasonable at a certain level. And he said, but I worry that you're a big government guy. And I said, well, I'm not a big government guy, but I'm worried that you're a big government guy. And he said, not me. And I said, well, then let's agree to close the Pentagon. And he said, not the Pentagon. And so we ended up in a very spirited discussion about issues like how they'd gotten to the university on their motorcycles. Of course, they'd driven up the interstate, which I pointed out to them was a socialist road. And that made them laugh. But we had a really good discussion about the fact that all governments, no matter where, no matter when, their chief business is taxing and spending. The only question is tax whom, how much, and spend on what. And I want to spend on education, healthcare, and guarantees of income. And other people want to spend on war and incarceration and surveillance. That's the discussion we ought to be having, not the discussion about whether I want to tax people. Everybody taxes people. I mean, what we just witnessed in this Trump public relations show in Indiana with Carrier was really a deception of the highest order, because really what they were doing is giving tax public money to this corporation to save a few jobs in Indiana. It was a ridiculous public relations stunt. Will he get away with it? I don't think so. But right. I think we have to be aware and smart about things like that.
And given the tax structure, it will be those minimum wage workers at Walmart who will be paying for that incentive to save some $20 an hour jobs.
Absolutely.
You know, with the Hell's Angel example, that also brings up, in addition to the need for that kind of patient organizing and dialogue, just how powerful the sound bites and platitudes that are constantly that people are bombarded with, how difficult it is to counter those, such as the tax and spend liberal soundbite that people often hear. So right. What are some, you know, of course, we have the big projects of ending capitalism and the military-industrial complex to tackle. But what are some of the small projects that everyone can tackle day to day?
Well, I think part of what you're raising is this question of framing, and it's a question that organizers have to worry about. It's a question that teachers, I'm a lifelong teacher, and it's a question that teachers have to worry about. How do we talk about issues in a way that illuminates something real and something deep and not something superficial and worthy of a soundbite? So it's complicated, and there is no easy answer to it, but I think first, I want to commit to dialogue. I want to commit. You know, there's all this discussion recently about having difficult conversations at Thanksgiving or not going home for Thanksgiving because you don't want the Trump people and the Bernie people at the same table. I think a lot of that is ridiculous. We need to learn to talk to strangers, but also to family members with whom we disagree. There's nothing wrong with disagreeing. You don't have to be completely unpleasant, but dialogue requires that you speak with the possibility of being heard, but you also listen with the possibility of being changed. And you have to have courage to enter into that thing. It's not enough to live in this kind of security of your own, you know, community or your own, you know, folks you agree with. You have to kind of get out and test your ideas. So dialogue is important. But I also think it's important to think through what the issue is you're talking about. I mentioned education. If education is a human right and not a product to be sold at the marketplace, we're having a different conversation. I want to raise the idea that education is a human right. The implication of that is that every kid deserves a fully funded, fully resourced, decent, successful public school right in their neighborhood, just like suburban kids have. Why is that so difficult to imagine when we're doing charters, and now the debate is going to be between charters and vouchers? So I want to say forcefully, every kid deserves a neighborhood school that's successful, fully resourced, forward-looking. And I think we need to, again, frame the issue. Here's another example from my world of education. Every time a politician has gotten to the microphone in the last dozen years, they say something like, we need to get the lazy, incompetent teachers out of the classroom. And I find myself nodding dully. What am I going to say? Keep the lazy, incompetent one there for my granddaughter? No, I'm going to say, of course, get the lazy. But that's not the issue. If I get to the microphone first and frame the issue this way, I win the argument. I would say every kid deserves, in every classroom, deserves an intellectually grounded, compassionate, caring, well-rested and well-paid teacher in the classroom. If I frame it that way, I win the argument. So part of what we have to think about as organizers and educators is how are we framing the issues that matter most? Most people, you know, this is another odd thing that I believe, but I've believed my whole life, while I'm kind of characterized as being on the ultra-left, which I suppose I am, I've also always believed that I'm in the majority in this country on the 10 or 12 issues that matter most to me.
And that's right, Bill, we're out of time, but that's right. We've got to step up to the microphone, whether it's at the school board debate or the neighborhood, and
Absolutely.
Help frame these issues so that the majority understands how the issue needs to be framed. So thanks so much, Bill, for joining us today on the Old Mole Variety Hour. Bill Ayers will be at Tsunami Books in Eugene on December 11th and in Portland next Monday, December 12th at Powell's Books downtown at 7:30 to discuss his new book, Demand the Impossible, A Radical Manifesto. And you can also follow Bill Ayers at his blog at billayers.org.